Cloudcast Media.
Welcome to Your Next Mission Podcast with the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley. Proudly presented by Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans.
Hello out there, veterans and families, and welcome to Your Next Mission, a new program initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major in the Army, your host. I love saying your host each time. We have an outstanding show for you today. In fact, we have an unbelievable show we're going to produce here today. We're going to focus on one person, Master Sergeant retired and Medal of Honor recipient, Leroy Petrie. I also have a couple of stories for you, including one from our guest on how he handled his transition. Now, before we get started, I want to thank our presenting sponsors, Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans for making Your Next Mission happen. They love our veterans and families. I guarantee you we love them too. As I mentioned, today's theme is about one individual whose heroic and unselfish efforts while on duty in Afghanistan earned him the U.S. military's highest decoration, the Medal of Honor. And I'm so excited and really honored to introduce Master Sergeant retired Leroy Petrie. How you doing there, Leroy?
I'm doing good, Sergeant Major. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. Thank you for doing this podcast. I think it's awesome that you're still out there reaching out to our veterans and our military.
Well, you know, the older I get, the more I realize I want to reach out to more of them. That's for doggone sure. I know the audience is eager to hear your story. But before that, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, why you came into the service? Just give us a little bit of history about Leroy. Yeah.
Absolutely, Sergeant Major. I grew up middle of four boys, and we were always out playing. We didn't have Xbox and internet and all that good stuff that they do today. So we were out playing out in the field, out in the yards, and played Army. And that's what you did. G.I. Joe, B.O. That was really what influenced us to play that as kids, was G.I. Joe and stuff like that. But my mom's cousin got deployed to Desert Storm or Shield. I can't remember which it was at the time. But it really started getting me to ask questions. Well, why is he going overseas to a place we don't even know to risk his life for those people over there that we don't know? And as I started asking those questions, it made me realize he wasn't only doing it for them, he was doing it for us back here at home as well. And I started thinking about it, and I said, wow, all these people have served in the military. I grew up free in a country, enjoyed all these rights and freedoms and my way of life growing up because somebody else was standing guard, whether they deployed or not. They were prepared to.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to give that back. And so after I graduated high school, went to college for a small bit, and it wasn't where I wanted to be. I wanted to be in the Army. And so my focus wasn't on school. And so I signed up, and my dad said, hey, doesn't school start next week, when I was supposed to go back? And I said, yeah, but I leave on Wednesday, which was 2 days away from basic training.
Yeah.
My mom didn't take it so well.
You know, it's really funny that when people talk about, you know, why they joined the service, you get a whole lot of different things. But one of the things that I always think about, that people that come into the military, you know, they swear to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And what that means to me is they're willing to die for the freedoms of our country. And that's a big deal. And I wish more people would serve, but they don't. Well, thank you for your service. I know you loved that. I loved every day I was in, too. I know you've been asked this countless times about, tell the story about your deployment to Afghanistan, and that led you to being awarded the Medal of Honor. And hopefully now, you don't mind talking through that for just a moment.
Absolutely. It was my seventh deployment.
Oh, my goodness.
Sixth to Afghanistan, fifth to Afghanistan, and We got tasked as the helicopter platoon. So anywhere the helicopters went, we went. If they went back for maintenance at Bagram, we went with them. And it was tough because living out of a rucksack, you never saw our D bag or C bag, and everywhere we're going is pack, unpack, and couldn't really get too comfortable anywhere. And we got tasked the night before. They shut down all special operations in theater, and they said they had intel that a high value target was moving in theater, and whatever area of operations he popped up in, the closest special ops were going to action on it. And so the next morning I was going to the talk. We operate only mostly during nighttime, and daytime's when we rest and gym and laundry, that stuff. And I went to the talk to check my email, and one officer's in there on top guard, and it was early in the morning, and all of a sudden he jumps up from across the room behind his laptop, and he says, "Petrie, go wake up the pilots." Didn't even question him, went and woke up the pilots, figured something was brewing. So I went and woke up my guys, told them, start checking your equipment, make sure everything's right. Went and did some quick planning with the leaders. And next thing we know, we're out on Chinooks, headed out to target. And one of my first sergeants probably explained it the best. He said, normally you see, you don't see each other because you're looking through night vision and everybody's got green faces. And he said it was a little bit different because you could see the emotions on people's faces, and kind of everybody had that little bit of sixth sense of little uneasiness, because now we're going on a more even battlefield fighting during daylight. And with the high value targets usually came a more robust PSD who were willing to fight to the death. And two, they were going to hear us coming from miles out in those Chinooks, and we were landing on target. And so in my mind, I was going through all the scenarios. Okay, what am I going to do? Just the base plan that we had, but also a lot of contingencies. What am I going to do at this point? What am I going to do here? What if this happens? How am I going to prepare for it? And as soon as we touched down, we were taking fire coming off the back of the aircraft. And we killed the enemy, politically correct, neutralized a threat.
Good.
And as we're clearing the body, the platoon leader and I, we hear over the radio one of our younger squad leaders had gone into the wrong compound. And this is rural Afghanistan, a compound here and there, spread out through farming fields in between. And so I told him, the PL, I'm going to break off and we're going to provide overwatch and guidance for the second squad. And he said, all right, go on, get out of here. And I ran off, catch up with him. And when I caught up to him, I was the last guy in the stack. And they had already breached the outer compound wall, which was about 20 foot, kind of the mud adobe looking huts. And as I broke into this courtyard, there was two buildings, one in the back corner that was a two-story building and a small building adjacent to it, which from imagery, we called it a chicken coop. There was no chickens in there, which I get asked all the time.
Yeah,
but it, just because of its comparison in size, but they committed to clearing the two-story building, which in my eyes, they should have grabbed a foothold first and cleared the courtyard and then started clearing the buildings. But either way, they were committed, so I followed them. As the last guy went through the door, I stayed in the doorway and covered the courtyard. And I said, give me another guy. We need to clear this courtyard and the building next to it. And as soon as PFC Robinson tapped me on my back, I knew I had somebody. I didn't know who it was at the time, but we started moving. And as we were moving toward the chicken coop, two guys popped up to our left, spraying probably about 15 feet away or so, spraying AK-47s from the hip. And a round struck me in the upper thigh. Kind of felt like I'd never been shot, so it kind of felt like a sledgehammer. And reminded me of the hunting shows you see on TV where they shoot the buck and it kind of bucks to the side.
Yeah. It takes off running. Yeah.
And that's what I did, was I kept running. I was like, okay, I'm hit, but I need to get out of the volume of fire before I catch more rounds. And Robinson got hit just below his armpit. We found out later it was about an eighth of an inch from going over his side plate, and it would have killed him.
Oh my goodness.
And that's one of the things that was always important is we just got those side plates not long before, and checking guys' equipment, because some of them would wear the side plates really low. It's like, you're not going to protect your love handles and your stomach. All your heart and your lungs are up here. This is where you need it. And so he got lucky, and he followed me. He didn't know how bad he was hit, but he knew he was hit. And we got behind that small chicken coop with our backs to it. And he's to my right. And I told him, hey, watch that corner. I'm watching my corner. And my fear is they're going to come around the sides and finish us off while we're injured. And so I prepped a grenade, threw it over. It went off, kind of bought us a lull in fire. At that point, Sergeant Higgins comes running over. And immediately I tell him, hey, help Robinson, watch that corner. I got on my radio, started trying to paint the picture for the rest of my element, platoon leader, platoon sergeant. So, hey, we got a couple of Rangers that are injured. We're still under heavy small arms contact. And watching my corner, checking on my guys. And next thing we know, we hear a blast. Kind of stuns those two. And they turn to me and they're like, what the hell was that? And I said, they're throwing grenades. Keep your heads down. Keep watching that corner. And I'm checking my side, checking on them, doing my radio checks. And next thing I know, I kind of almost took a seated, squatted position because my leg was hurting at that time. And when I turned to check on them again, right behind them, I noticed a pineapple grenade. And I knew that we hadn't used those in years. I saw it immediately as a threat. But I looked at those guys like I looked at my kids, like I looked at my brothers and their family. And I reached over and I grabbed the grenade. And as I was extending my arm to throw it, I opened my hand and it exploded. And I sat back up and I grabbed my arm below my wrist where it had been blown off. And I'll show you this cool prosthetic, but the hand was completely gone. And the radius and the ulna bone were poking up about a half an inch. It was oozing blood, and you could see the burns and the dirt and the debris that were still in there. And you could smell it. It was all pretty nasty, but the skin was like, well, that part was kind of Hollywood, but it was like flapped over like a meat skirt, all jagged around, just flaps of skin. And that's what went through my mind at that point was, why isn't it spraying like in the movies?
Yeah.
3 feet in the air.
Yeah.
But then reality kicked in and I said, okay, I need to take care of this. I reached down, I grabbed a tourniquet and I tied it off with my teeth and stopped it from bleeding. Immediately checked on the guys next to me who both got minor shrapnel and got back on my radio. And next thing I know, one of my first sergeants comes running up to me and he reaches down and grabs my kit by my shoulder and in an attempt to pick me up. And he goes, come on, we're going to get you out of here. And I pushed his arm down and away. And I said, you're not taking me anywhere till you kill those SOBs that are behind the building. Stop the volume of fire that's on us. And he saw that I was coherent and that I'd already started doing self-aid. And the best aid he could give me was taking out the enemy that was still threatening us. Mm. And so he said, we'll be back. And he took off and they went to go flank or something. And for whatever reason, there was another lull in fire and I was able to grab onto another guy and we ran till we got to the CCP. At that point, I'm looking around, there's people getting treated, blood everywhere. And one of our medics comes running up to me and goes, Sergeant Petrie, we need to look at you. And I said, I'm good. I got a tourniquet. I stopped the bleeding, help those guys. He said, well, we got to look at your legs, and completely forgot about my legs. I looked down and my pants were soaked in blood all the way to my boots. And mentally, I wanted to stay in the fight, even if I used my last breath to make a radio call that would help my guys. But physically, I knew I was running out of juice. And I said, okay, go ahead and take a look at my legs. And they cut off my pants. And we noticed that either it was the same round or an additional round that had penetrated my other upper thigh as well. And they put tourniquets on, packaged me in a litter. And miraculously, 7.62 round is not a small round from 15 feet away.
No joke.
And it went through both my upper thighs and missed all the bone and all the arteries. Had it nicked one of my arteries, I wouldn't be here talking with you today. But they packaged me up. They started moving us toward the HLZ. I remember seeing guys on top of the two-story building pulling security with their guns. And as they're carrying me up this little hill where the HLZ is, guys are running up. And they're like, "They're going to be all right. We're going to get them. You're going to be all right." And trying to comfort me. And I'm pushing them away with my one good hand saying, "Get the hell out of here. Go pull security." Because in my mind, we're not out of danger yet. I didn't want to have one of them get shot coming to comfort me. Worse, I didn't want to get shot in a litter where I couldn't defend myself.
Yeah.
And so we loaded up on the helicopters. And I remember Sergeant Higgins on the ramp. He came up and he's like, "You saved us. You saved us." And I was like, "Great. Get on the damn birds." My idea is we're a huge target sitting there on the ground.
Yeah.
But the helicopters took us out to the FOB, Sharana, where we were based out of. And they basically unloaded us on the side of this dirt airfield and took off back to support the mission. And thankfully, I had two PAs who I was very familiar with from our unit. And they were working on all the casualties. And it's kind of crazy. But PA comes up and he gives me these two fentanyl pops, which we always joke with the medics, "Hey, give me a fentanyl pop," but never actually seen one.
Yeah.
And what it is these little two sticks, and it's plastic on the end. And it's kind of like the candy dipping sticks. And so he hands them to me. I bite the ends off and I throw the plastic tubes. He turns around like 30 seconds later. He goes, "What'd you do with the pops I gave you?" And I said, I bit them. I chewed them up. I threw the sticks over there. And he smacks me on the head. He goes, "You idiot. You're supposed to suck on them or else you don't get the medicine." I was like, "Well, you should have told me." And he gives me a couple more. And about 20 minutes later, the fixed wing shows up. And they, about 20 minutes into flight, they heavily sedated me. And I woke up the next day in Germany. But we did lose one guy in that compound that day. A specialist gave the call. Him and his squad leader were coming out to assist. And apparently there was another guy on the other corner of the courtyard, and when he was getting ready to turn the corner, the guy opened up on him and it hit him right below his helmet, almost in the temple, and pretty much killed him instantly. Yeah. But I the part in Germany though, I knew my wife was going to be nervous, and I knew Rear D was going to tell her that I'd been injured and what details they knew at the time. And it was Memorial Day that year, and she got the knock at the door, and my mother-in-law was there. My mother-in-law would sometimes come in during my deployments, and my wife said, that was the hardest day of her life. And I joke with her, and I show her my prosthetic, and I said, "Wasn't my best day either, honey."
But
what happened is that, well, if you're a casualty, they'll come in fatigues, and if you're killed in action, they'll come in dress uniform. Mm-hmm. It was early in the morning and they got the knock, and she looked through the peephole and all she saw was that Ranger tambourine. And she didn't even look at the uniform. She just backed away from the door and said, "Mom, you're going to have to get the door. Send the kids upstairs." And so I knew this was happening in Germany. I got to call her, and I'm trying to think how I can put her mind at ease that I'm in good spirits and I'm doing okay. And so she says, I called and she answered, and I said, "Hey, honey, it's me. I'm in Germany. I got shot through both my thighs and I lost my right leg, or I lost my right hand above the wrist." And the phone goes dead silent. And so I'm trying to think of what I could say. And I said, "The good news is the junk's still there." And she knew I was going to be okay after that.
Well, you know, it's funny that, you know, I've been around a lot of people that unfortunately have gotten wounded in war and lost limbs, and it's always great to talk to him, because I think that's part of your therapy, you know, where you're talking about it. I think people that bottle it up a little bit, you know, they can't work through the issues, and I'm glad that that you're very open about talking about it, because I think the key to success is talk about it, because it helps you cure yourself, if that makes sense to you. I'm sure it does.
It does, Sergeant Major. I'm sorry. I was going to say, I look at the two guys that were next to me, and they both stayed in the military a little bit longer, and they got out, and they have great lives and starting families and went to college, and they're living full lives. Yeah. And so it's a good thing.
Well, I think the thing about that is I tell people all the time, I went in at 18, at 17 years old in the service, and I went from 17 to 55 in war. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And you're listening to Your Next Mission podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tully, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And Leroy, what was it like when you stood out with the President Obama and you was awarded the Medal of Honor? I mean, that had to be a heck of a moment there for you.
Oh, I actually got over it because of my leg injuries. I couldn't stand for the whole ceremony.
So they let you sit in a chair. That was good.
They let me sit in a chair, which was great because I wasn't stiff. And at attention, I got to look around the room and really see the people that were there on the mission that were able to make it. My family, friends, and at one point during the ceremony, I leaned over and I whispered in the president's ear and basically said, rarely do you have everybody you want under one roof. And it's usually at your funeral and you're not there to enjoy it. To see everybody there that was sharing the recognition is what made it great. And he smiled. And of course, all the media was like, won't you whisper in the president's ear? He smiled, got a big old grin.
Yeah. It's a special relationship with people in the military. And when you fight next to somebody or you train with nobody or whatever, but the relationship that service members, not just the Army, but all services have with each other is just unbelievable. You've often said that we are terrible advocates for ourselves, but great advocates for others. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Or, you know, what does that mean?
I think that's it's a burden of selfless service and leadership.
Yeah.
We always put ourselves last. We sometimes, and I'm still guilty of it today. I end up doing everybody else's stuff and getting to my stuff last. But I saw a number of sergeant majors who thought they were getting out of the military, and they go to do their medical review board.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going to extend you for 6 months because you need this surgery and this and this. You've put yourself off for so long. And that's exactly what we do is we tend to try to carry the load on the weight all on our own. And we become what one of my psychologists that I was talking to said, you're a rescue. Yeah. And I didn't understand what she meant. But at the end of the conversation, I said, I get it. I thought of myself with all my gear on, all that weight. And if I see somebody drowning, I can't jump in and help them until I take some of that weight off myself. And so sometimes we got to take care of ourselves in order to take care of others.
I think especially senior officers and senior NCOs that's exactly what, you know, you're trained to do that. You're trained to take care of others and make sure they're taken care of. And that's, you know, that's what good soldiers do. And I don't think you'll ever take that away from them. I mean, that's just, we've all did it, but unfortunately I think sometimes that we got to look back and make sure we take care of ourselves and do the things that are right for not only you, but your family. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Your Next Mission Podcast.
This Your Next Mission Podcast is made possible by Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome back. I'm the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and Jack L. Tully, and we're blessed to be here today with Master Sergeant retired Leroy Petrie. And we're at one of my favorite parts of the podcast where we get to hear from a veteran about their transition. We're lucky today to have a veteran in Master Sergeant Petrie with us today. And can you tell us a little bit about your transition and maybe give some advice to our listeners that are going to be transitioning here pretty quick?
Transition is different for everybody. And I know for myself, I transitioned myself into, well, more the same up-tempo.
Yeah.
And so I stayed completely busy just like I was in and supporting a lot of veterans and wounded and their families and military and law enforcement, first responders. And for me, I looked at it. I had been given a platform to continue to do great things. And this medal, they say, some of the recipients will say it's heavy to wear. And for me, it gets lighter the more people I share it with. And I tell them that it belongs to all of us, those who have served, are serving, and those who paid the ultimate sacrifice. But what it is a representation of a lot of times the people that get all the accolades and credit are the door kickers or the boots on the ground. But I realized I was part of a team. I didn't get through anything by myself in the military. And so what it is it's a symbol that any of our service members are capable of great things. And a lot of them sometimes don't get recognized. But the transition for me, it's been difficult at times. I realized that a lot of the hardest part of transitioning is, you miss that camaraderie, but the reason you miss that camaraderie is because for a short period in your life, you're surrounded by like-minded people that share the same values, know what initiative is, teamwork is, leadership is. Then you get out in the civilian world and there's a lot of people that will throw you under the bus or step on you just to get ahead and don't know what it means to sacrifice or to do more that, hey, we could finish this project if we get to do 20 more minutes. Ah, well, we're not getting paid overtime. They check out. It's different for everyone because we go back to different lifestyles, different areas of the country. And some of us are content with just being the gray man.
Yeah.
But I think as veterans, though, myself, I always look to what I could do and made good friends with Howard Schultz. And something that he told me really stuck out. And he said, I could do more. And I realized that that's for everybody. We could do more.
Well, I think, I say this all the time. It's not what you have. It's what you do with what you have. And you said it a minute ago. You have a platform that that you can go out and share that information with people around you. One of the things that always gets me is the fact that there's not a whole lot of people that know anything about the military. They don't know the kind of sacrifices not only the service members make, but the families make for this country each and every day. So it's tough. It's tough on a lot of people. I think the hardest part, again, about transition is for me personally, it was about fitting in, trying to figure out a way to fit in again. And that takes a while. And you've said it a couple times, it's different for everybody. But I think it probably took me a year or 2 years or 3 years or I'm not even necessarily sure I ever really fit back in again. But, there's a lot of people out there like me and you that that can help.
Major, it's the same as when you get into that new job or that new unit or when you're coming in the military. The thing that we always do is seek out the veterans, that were there before us. Don't be afraid to reach out to them and figure out how to transition wherever you're at. Yeah. Find the veterans for support.
Yeah. A good mentor is what I always like. Find a good mentor to help. Absolutely. Hey, Leroy, thanks a lot for sharing your insights about transition. And I want all our listeners to reach out to me directly. Tell us about your transition. Tell us about what topics you'd like us to discover. This is not my podcast or anybody's podcast. This is your podcast. And we want to help you in any way we can. You can call or text me at 844-424-1134. And I'll reach out to you. I'll actually call you or I'll text you back, but I'll talk to you. Or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Okay, let's pick it up where we left off. You're listening to Your Next Mission podcast. I'm Jack Tilly, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. We're talking to Master Sergeant, retired, and Medal of Honor recipient, Leroy Petrie. And we're heading into the final segments with you today. And I hope you've enjoyed it just as much as I have. And I just have a few more questions for you. Leroy, what have you been doing since you got out of the service?
Really, I've been doing the same thing I did my last several years in the military, and that was taking care of the wounded, ill, injured, and their families, and helping out anywhere I can to make a positive impact in society. And I went from 2011 till COVID last year, averaging about 220 days on the road, going everywhere I could to be of support and really this past couple of years, though, my focus has been on mental health.
Yeah.
And helping those get past the stigma and encouraging folks to get the help they need. And I tell folks that we're so quick to raise our hand and say, I can't go on a 5-mile run. I twisted my ankle. We focus a lot on our physical health, but very rarely do we take care of our mental health.
Yeah. Do you suffer? I didn't mean to cut you off. Do you suffer from post-traumatic stress? PTSD, I guess you know.
I was never diagnosed with it. I think everybody that deploys comes back a little different.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends have severe PTSD, and what I try to encourage them is, if you have those nightmares and you have those bad thoughts, fill your mind with as many positive, good memories as you can. Make every day count, and hopefully those will be the ones that reoccur.
Yeah.
I do have the traumatic brain injury, which that thing kicks my butt. It's like early Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Lose yourself mid-sentence a lot.
Well, the good thing about that, if you got such a positive attitude, and I think that's part of life anyway, having a good attitude, look at the good things in life versus the negative things in life. Do you still stay in touch with some of your battle buddies?
I do. We're, unlike when I was a kid, we're blessed today that we have all these different ways of connecting on the phone, on the internet, now video, and the Facebook, all the social media. So Facebook has been one of the best things for me, because I've found people I've lost touch with for years and not knowing where they're at. And then all of a sudden they pop up on a page of a friend of a friend. I'm like, holy cow, reach out to them. Hey, where you been? What's new? And it's great.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because we have a social media for Your Next Mission, and we're on all the social media networks and stuff. And I've heard from people I haven't seen in years that I was stationed with in Germany or in the Pentagon, or you know, even Vietnam years ago. So it really is a good way to reach out and touch people and help them as much as you can. And Leroy, I just would, again, thank you for what you do and what you continue to do. Any final thoughts about anything that you'd like to share with the audience?
I'd encourage everybody to not only meet the standard, but exceed the standard in whatever you do. And Ronald Reagan, my favorite quote, he said, we can't help everyone, but everyone can help someone.
That's right.
So make this world better and help somebody every single day.
You know, that's great advice, because I try to do that. I always look at my wife gets on me every once in a while. I always look at the positive versus the negative in life, like I said before. But I want to try each and every day of my life for the rest of my life, just like you. I want to do something for somebody each and every day. And it may be something real small or something big. So I'm really.
You could be a hero to somebody by simply listening to their problems when they're having a bad day.
Yeah, that's the key to success. Again, thanks, Leroy, Master Sergeant Leroy Petrie. I just can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. I'm Jack Tilley, and you've been listening to Your Next Mission podcast. And thank you for listening today. Please visit our website, yournextmission.org, and leave me a review. Hopefully now it's a good review. I don't want nothing negative here. Remember, I talk about positive stuff. You can also visit our partners there, who can provide you with so many services that will assist you in your transition from the military. Also, please visit our corporate partners and see all the jobs that are available for you. They got plenty of jobs. All you got to do is look. And please know that we want to assist you in any way that we can. Leroy talked about it all the time about, you know, veterans helping veterans. That's what we want to do. Please follow us on my personal social media channels, Facebook, love Facebook, right, Leroy? Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Also, we have a live Your Next Mission Veterans Hire event coming up on Huntsville on 11 August at the Von Braun Center with the Space and Missile Defense Symposium. Please visit Huntsville 2021 at yournextmission.org for more information. Thanks again, Master Sergeant retired Leroy Petrie, for being with us today. It was great just having you on the podcast. And don't forget, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134. Or send me an email, smatilly@yournextmission.org. I want to end each podcast with a little story about me. I love talking about me anyway and the experiences that that I had in the Army. But I was, you know, I was thinking about Brother Leroy, all the time you was talking, I was thinking about you and how open and how motivated and how enthusiastic you are. And I was thinking about, I was doing a concert up in New York, me and Ted Hacker, American Freedom Foundation. And we brought on two wounded warriors. And it was probably the first time we'd ever did anything like that. And one of them, unfortunately, was blind. And the other one was, I think, missing a limb or something like that. And I was standing off backstage and stuff, and they both got up and talked on stage to the audience, and they was leaving. And the one guy that just had, that was missing a limb, said, "Come on, man, hurry up." And the other guy said, "Shut up, I'm blind." And I thought to myself, how do you find people like that? How do you find people that care so much about our country to give up whatever, but willing to give up the life for our country? They're very, very special people. And so when you see a veteran, you know, a lot of people say, thank you for your service, but thank them for their service. Thank them for what they do each and every day to keep me and you and Leroy and all the rest of us free. Again, God bless you, Leroy, and thanks for coming on. Thanks to Cloudcast Media and of course, our four presenting sponsors, Calvary Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, and Purdue University and Veterans United Home Loans. We appreciate all they do for our military. See you on the high ground. Hoo-ah! Hoo-ah.
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.
Cloudcast Media.